Here's Mary Ellen Angelscribe, author of Expect Miracles, with a Miracle Minute.
Angel mystic Atira was born with an amazing gift. Atira has seen and talked with angels and her spirit guide for as long as she can remember. And now she connects you with spirit as the angels answer your questions on past lives, passed over loved ones, dreams, relatives, workplace, and spiritual experiences. Atira is an Edgar Cayce Foundation handpicked psychic and is featured in The Days of Wonder by G.W. Hardin. Atira's magical, uplifting, worldwide readings are just $100 for 45 minutes, which includes an audio tape. Email angelreadings@angelscribe.com. That's angelreadings@angelscribe.com for an appointment, or go to Atira's website at angelscribe.com. For metaphysical, straight talk from the heart, it's Atira, Angel Mystic.
Here's Mary Ellen Angelscribe, author of Expect Miracles, with a Miracle Minute.
Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And today I'm very happy to address a subject that is near and dear to my heart, and that is the subject of clairvoyant psychic children. Whether you call them crystal, indigo, rainbow kids, there are forerunners to all of those kids that I really know personally about, and I think it's a subject that can never be talked about too much. One of the things that I think is so important in our time period is these new children, or these children that we call the indigos. I often laugh and talk and tease about that, you know, they're the Pentiums and I'm the 286. And we are really just now coming to a time where we're seeing a few books, things that are really going to help the parents, because I was a child who was raised with a Southern Baptist mother, and my father was part of Native American. So it was interesting, their frame of reference. There was not a lot of frame of reference for support. Today I'm going to talk to the author of a fabulous book called Encourage Your Child's Spiritual Intelligence. Her name is Dr. Molly Payton, and she is a PSYD, which I'll have her explain to you. I think that's a whole new ending to a degree that I don't know too much about. But one thing she, in her bio that I found very, very fascinating is she helped found a foundation, and it's called the Interplay Center in Fort Collins, Colorado, and it's dedicated to recognizing and understanding and supporting and enriching and nurturing these children, these gifted children, talented children, and children who have also suffered experiences that they don't know how to deal with. She's a fascinating. Molly, welcome to my show.
Thank you, Atira. It's good to be here.
So first, explain PSYD for my audience.
Okay. That is a doctor of psychology. It's a very clinically based program, which means a real hands-on kind of degree. It's a little bit more recent than the PhD, but it's basically the same thing. It's just a political issue with universities. If there's already a couple of PhD programs in the state for psychology and someone else wants to have a doctoral program, then they may get a PsyD or the other way around.
Well, they're always improving us in some way, aren't they?
They are.
I loved this, the name of your book, The Spiritual Intelligence of Children. I love that so much because right off the bat, it empowers us. It empowers the children, empowers people with these gifts rather than putting us in that separation of we're just crazy, or, you know.
Right. Atira, that's so much the point, that this is not pathology we're looking at. We're not looking at a liability. We're not looking at something that needs to be changed. We're looking at characteristics and experiences that need to be validated and made stronger in every way.
Enhanced.
I love that. Yeah,
enhanced. I told you I'd talk over you. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Because I think in my work over all my lifetime, really, in my personal experience of being a clairvoyant kid and having things invalidated. I have to tell you, when I read about, you know, not destroying people's invisible friends, you are near and dear to my heart from that moment on. Because I've had my guide, Don Salas, with me, which I couldn't say, so I called him Don, for many, you know, all my lifetime.
Since you were a child.
Yeah. Since I was five. So I really want your version and your definition of this, what is spiritual intelligence, for my audience.
Okay, spiritual intelligence, my definition, is boys and girls' capacity to be awake and aware of a deeper dimension of themselves that leads to wisdom and intuition, to compassion, and to otherworldly experiences. Now, I know that's a mouthful. It's basically children's inner worlds, and it's their greatest when they are there, and when their spiritual intelligence is encouraged, or their inner worlds are encouraged, their greatest potential for healing and happiness is realized. And they play out all of that in the playroom. It takes what it's doing, it's taking intelligence one step further for us to really honor our children by being aware of their inner worlds or their spiritual intelligence. It's what makes our children tick, and yet it's the very thing that we oppress in them and that scares us.
Talk about your playroom for a minute. Talk about what you mean by that, because I think that's one thing I'd like to try and give some of our listeners today. Because I've had so many of my clients say, I have this great indigo kid, but what do I do with them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
I think the basic three words I use are confirm, comfort, and communicate. And what all of those things are going to do for your child is validate who they are. You can start as basic as telling a child, you don't feel that way. Or no, that didn't happen. No matter what it is, it doesn't even have to be necessarily a spiritual experience. You know, children grow up being told, no, you don't feel that way. You aren't that way. So if you just turn that around, reverse that whole process, and listen and say, okay, yeah, I can see why you would feel that way. I felt that way when I was a child. I had this experience. I had an imaginary companion. Or even a child who has told you, I have an angel who visits me or who's with me all the time. And once in a while, just like if that child talks about a friend, you're going to say, how's Jessica doing? Well, every once in a while, you say, how's your angel? And make it just a part of the family talk, household words.
So I that love it, that.
You celebrate, you can celebrate birthdays with them. You can, you know, because usually they'll say when the birthday is of their imaginary companion or their spiritual companion or their angel. And I've been seeing a couple of years ago, actually, it was a couple of boys, twins, and working with them on their parents' divorce. Okay, worked, did all the traditional kinds of stuff, validating them, working to help them to be okay about that. And then one day I asked them, somehow imaginary companions came up because I think my book was laying on the table or something. I was telling them about it. And they said that they both had those, and they started telling me these incredible details and names and how many and the functions they served. And we got into that for a whole hour. They came back the next week and reported that they had had the best week yet in 6 months. That was in their inner worlds. That was, they were being validated for who they really are. And once.
Well, you recognize that they're in an abandonment situation, and yet they have this invisible support system there waiting and helping.
Right.
But was probably told by their family that doesn't exist. And then here you come and say, guess what? I believe in it.
You know, they told their parents after we talked, and their parents said that they were great about it, but they had always hidden it. It was like a secret they had to keep instead of a resource that they could openly use, like you suggested.
Well, you know, our society is not very conducive to supporting that which is not seen by everyone or is not the acceptable norm by the system, by belief systems. And so I think one of the great gifts of this book is that it helps people understand what a child's world is. I think people, as we get adult, we kind of get so caught up in the woulda, shoulda, couldas and stuff, we lose mm-hmm. that simplicity. And so, therefore, we can't even necessarily communicate in the way we need. So one of the things I found absolutely fascinating about your book is that you do offer tools to help parents.
That's right.
And the children.
Yes. And again, that's along the lines of, if you want to put it in three words, confirm, comfort, and communicate. Whatever the subject is, and sometimes it's really tough because it may be talking about death. It may be validating that this child is saying, my mother's dying, and you know that she's dying, and going ahead and saying, yes, she is. It may be dealing with them feeling the presence of evil in their lives. And for some of them, this is a metaphorical, not a literal kind of process that they play out, but it's something bad has happened to them. And so to them, that's evil. And in many cases, it is pretty evil, what goes on and what has hurt so many of the kids that I see.
Well, there's other aspects of, even if the kid has not been traumatized, as a child, you know, when I met Dom, he is absolutely real to me today, just as much mm-hmm. as he was when I was five. But, you know, that there are also other things that come along with being clairvoyant and other dimensions, other things you see that maybe your parents, other people around you don't see. It doesn't mean they're not happening. It just means
right.
that their perspective is not there. So the reality of, you know, something being in your closet or under your bed, because those are doorways, in a way, to other dimensions often, because they're not really in a room or, you know, they're not a room and in a room. So they
mm-hmm.
actually are doorways in a way, and so people will see that. And kids, I've dealt with adults that have never dealt with what's under the bed, you know? The monster
right.
under the bed, or their fears because they saw shadow people, which society may have encouraged them to think of them as ghosts, fearful ghosts, rather than just souls who have passed over. So the fear dimension gets so built. One of the things you talk about in your book is you have some self-quizzes.
That's right. One of them is, are you spiritually gifted? And basically what it does, it helps parents to identify which the seven branches of what I have called the spiritual tree of life that they rest on and which ones their children are on. And once you know that, you can identify a lot of the needs of the children and their strengths and their vulnerabilities and your own. So it's very helpful to take those little quizzes. They are not a black and white process. I don't in any way think that we can quantify spirituality. It's just an attempt, just a window in time to see where you might be as to these questions.
Molly, I'm going to interrupt you just for a minute. Dawn, if you can hear me in the control room, could you check the...
I'm having a little trouble.
I'm having trouble, too. I think we have a problem in the system. I'm going to hope that they will hear me. And you want to say something, Molly? I'll hear if I hear you. Hello?
I can understand you, but it's wobbly.
Yeah, it's wobbly for me, too, so I think it's actually in the system.
Have you ever wondered about miracles? Would you like to have your spirit uplifted by inspiring stories of the miraculous in everyday life? Expect Miracles does just that. Author Mary Ellen Angel Scribe shares a wonderful compilation of 70 gentle-hearted, true miracle stories sent to her by readers of her Miracles and Good newsletter. A Christmas filled with miracles is also the result of people sharing miracles that have found their way into their lives. These inspirational and touching books are available now at angelscribe.com for just $15 plus shipping, and will be personally autographed by Mary Ellen Angel Scribe. Expect Miracles and A Christmas Filled with Miracles make wonderful gifts and will open your eyes to the possibility that miracles do happen. Expect Miracles at angelscribe.com.
This is Atira and Molly back on the air with Encouraging Your Children's Spiritual Intelligence. Molly, if you'll just start talking again about what the branches are and how that helps.
Okay. There are seven branches, as I said earlier. The first one is wisdom and intuition. An example of that is the way that children are very wise naturally. They know things that they aren't told. One boy, for instance, has an inner voice that keeps him safe. He's told me, I had a dream about my inner core, and his inner core said, Jonathan, you have to be scared. And then he said, then I'd be very careful about what I was doing. Just a natural wisdom. Another little girl whose mother had been sexually abused as a child and then brutally raped as an adult. This child knew nothing of any of this, and yet her major play in my playroom was killing the snake. And she said, I will kill the snake. The snake made my mother very sick. He made her so sick she killed herself because she was so miserable. Now that's a five-year-old who knew that. Another example, wisdom and intuition. When I was speaking in Sedona, Arizona, a Native American woman was there, a grandmother, and she very sadly shared with me the fact that her grandson had told her that he was going to die, and could he please take his brother to heaven with him? And she just told him, no, you're not going to die, you're fine, and your brother and you are both going to stay here. Within 6 months, he developed a brain tumor and died. And she always regretted that she hadn't just gone with him as far as supporting him on that journey. Another little girl remembered a past life when she was a queen, an African queen. And she said, I lived in a land where most people were poor and black. She was black too, but she was rich and powerful. And she told everyone what to do. She helped the poor get food. She remembered all this, and she said she told her mother, and her mother didn't believe her. Now here is a three-year-old in my playroom, and she stops our play and tells me this story. And she begs me, please believe me, because she says, I think my mom thinks I'm lying. But
well, I think it's so important to listen to the children. I think that's the biggest mistake. So our parents' generation made much more so than we mm-hmm. do, thank God. There's more awake people now. But I do think that there's so many people who just, they're kids, or invalidating. Don't pretend like that. Don't, you know, do that. And it crushes them. It crushes their spiritual intelligence. It crushes their soul. Because I really find kids from, as soon as they can talk to about six, often remember past lives.
Uh-huh. Yeah. They
so
do. The second branch is compassion, connection, and belonging. And these kids they have an all-embracing concern for others. They reach out to the world with a love that has no bounds. They have difficulty screening out others' distress. They want to heal people's suffering. They believe in the potential of the human race to live in peaceful unity with one another, and on and on. These are incredibly sensitive kids.
You know, under this category, I really want to talk a minute about, you know, kids don't know to discern, too, is this their stuff or somebody else's? Because I can remember if I had a dream and the next day it'd be on TV, I thought I caused it. Because I didn't know to discern I just picked it up, received it. I didn't cause it, you know. Or if the neighbors were dividing down the street, sometimes I would get caught up in that energy. I really think the second branch really is attached to that kind of experience.
It definitely is. And you're pointing out a very important function of a spiritual partner, often a parent or a teacher, even a doctor, anyone who knows these children well enough that they're going to be able to talk about some things, to help that child so that a little girl can say what you felt. You know, did I cause that? Is that, I thought about that and then it happened? Or I saw that and then it happened? And help them to understand their boundaries and their responsibility in who they are with their gifts. These children, they just are so close with the world, with everyone, that if they don't feel that closeness or they feel a lot of rejection, they sometimes, it becomes a matter of life or death. One little boy who's 10 years old, he said, sometimes I just want to die. I know that's not right, but when I'm rejected, it really hurts. And he was very different. He wasn't a jock, but he was bright, fun, great personality, good looking. But he,
well, a lot
he
of
was,
the kids, because of the sensitivity, I think become vulnerable. I can remember my mother used to always say, oh, you wear your heart on your sleeve, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's,
well,
that's
I did.
A branch too.
I wore my sensitivity on my sleeve. And so I mm-hmm. think, too, I've seen where these kids, in particular this stage, they go introverted on you.
That's right. And they can become angry, too. You know, they can either go in. I think probably the first thing is to go inside.
Yeah.
You can just imagine what it's like to be in a kid in our world, to be a kid in our world today, and have your focus be on the importance of love. And that is not a cool thing to talk about. And you talk about something like that, like a little girl who had a near-death experience and came back sharing that with everyone and ended up in all kinds of trouble because she wasn't supposed to talk about that. And luckily, her mother was very open and receptive and helped her through it and brought her to see me. And she was able to get through it. But there's been a lot of other kids who have not had that support.
Well, I think also here we are in this society, too, where female children could probably get away with being a little more nurturing and loving, where if a male child has that experience and understands that it really is about love and the whole aspect of things because they've had experience of it, what do you do with that? Because they're taught to stuff it.
That is such a big issue, Atira. Boys have a much harder time of it. They're taught to stuff basic feelings. So
yeah.
If they have an experience that makes them feel weird, different, they're really scared to say a word because somehow this impacts on their very identity, as though they're weak, as though they're not as good.
I've also met young kids, especially boys, who have had like some kind of spiritual awakening, and then because their parents, especially dads, you know, it's like suck it up, be macho, whatever,
mm-hmm.
they tend to tiptoe through life and really are almost totally destroyed. It's really a sad experience. But, you know, because
That's
they're true. A wonderful, sensitive person who has this mixed-up dichotomy going on inside.
That's right. And for them to feel and be able to live a life of integrity is almost impossible because there's such a disconnect between that part of them and this part that they have to show the world in order to survive.
Unless they run across a spiritual Edgar Cayce book, thank God for him. But, you know, this book that you've written here is so needed because, really, it is a journey that needs to be taken by the whole family.
That's right. It is.
You can get mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, other and siblings, people involved. It really will change the world as we know it. Excuse me. We need to get back to the third branch because I want all of it in on my show.
Okay. Here we go. See, the third branch is the fact that children see physical death as only permanent. They see death as only permanent in a physical sense. And this applies to so many children. I believe every child I've seen, with the exception of maybe one or two, if someone that they were close to died, that person became a part of their life. They visited them or they became a guardian angel. They somehow kept the connection alive with that person. The couple of exceptions that I was aware of had great guilt somehow around the death or something they had done soon after the death, such as a little girl who killed her hamster because she was so frustrated with the way she was being treated by her peers who made fun of her because her mother had died. This is common. Kids do not find a place where they can talk about death. and they don't find it with their peers unless they have a very good friend who has some real wisdom. This old girl killed her hamster. Pardon me?
It's true. It's true this happens. Unless they really have someone who sees death as just another transition that spirit lives on, it gets very confusing. Because when I talk to clients and kids today, it's very, the connection's there. They see them. If they've lost a dear pet, they'll say, oh, well, Blackie came and lay down on my bed last night, blah, blah, blah. And the parents instantly squish that out.
Right.
Get real, deal with this, loss. And I mean, people can be really cruel, and it's very, very disturbing for me as a spiritual person, because I've always seen this, but I can remember how my mother reacted when I saw, when I was at my first funeral.
Mm-hmm. I really think it's what you said earlier. It's an issue of fear. It's a discomfort with their own spiritual worlds that they were never encouraged to have, and now here my child is saying this.
I think physical death is an issue for most people, though, too. I think
it
our
is.
Society
yes.
is not
especially in our
with
society.
Death.
No.
Kobler-Ross's work is a major beginning, and Dr. Moody's work were major beginnings to help people cope with loss. But really, we're a fear-based society about that, and so really, a lot of adults can't nurture the children, who is much wiser than them, about that very
That's
subject.
Right. That's right, and very open and. They're the ones who have the visitors. And by the way, with children who are going through a tough time, these visitors are incredible resources and support for them.
Well, I want to say they're incredible loving support for anybody.
For any
child. It doesn't have to be a
yeah,
children.
Okay.
So many widows have told me so many times that, within the first week or two after their significant other passes, of having some kind of validating experience. So it's comforting to anyone who will be open enough to experience it.
It is. When my husband died many years ago, my daughters were 3 and 7, and they both saw him on sometimes a daily basis. And my oldest daughter saw lights around people. It just seemed to bring forth their spiritual gifts. And they did that for a couple of years. I had dreams.
The bond of love is never broken. And, I think that is mm-hmm. the energy that spirits that pass surf to get to us, is that love. And when we're first in mourning, we're in such deep fear and grief that the mm-hmm. vibration drops. And as soon as we let the love out again, then we have that experience of seeing and experiencing in them. The fourth branch. Tell me about the fourth branch.
The fourth branch is the world of spirit, and that involves contact with angels, spiritual companions, imaginary companions, elves, fairies, seeing colors, auras, rainbows, remembering flying, and trying to do that again. Sometimes.
Where were you when I needed you, Molly, when I was thrown out?
I knew this was your branch.
I love this book so much. Everybody that's listened, run out and buy it, because I have to tell you, it speaks to my inner child, and I'm going like, everything in here was so many things that I experienced. I mean, I really felt like you wrote it personally for me. So,
well, thank you. I'm glad you've been able to really enjoy it. See, the fifth branch, should we go on?
Well, I want to talk about this branch. Because
okay. This is a fun one.
It's a fun one. Well, because a lot of adults won't talk about lights, colors, fairies, but they will talk about flying dreams.
That's true. I've noticed that. Because out of my whole book, they'll pick that out, especially a couple of men have done that.
Yeah.
I've heard
yeah, male clients will admit to that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I used to fly. What happened to that,
Uh-huh.
So I think that's a valid part for, for male fathers to connect in this, reading this book.
That's a good point. That gives them a place, something to share with the kids. And if you can share one thing, then they're, that says this world, the spirit is okay. Yours may be different from mine, but it exists and it is okay.
What I also find is they'll go back and reread thinking, if the flying happened, maybe other things happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So it's like opens Pandora's box a little bit.
you keep making such a good point that this book isn't just about children. This book is about you and me and all of us, all of us. And our
well,
kids.
To me, it's parents, grandparents especially, because, you know, now in this day and age, a lot of grandparents are raising their grandkids, so it's so
That's
valid.
That's so true.
Okay,
that
fifth, I want to get through all of them.
Okay, let's go to the fifth branch, which is light and darkness, good and evil, and I touched on this a little bit earlier, that oftentimes this is about something bad that's happened to a child, or it can be about someone bad in their life, or both. It can be a divorce, can be a child being sexually abused, a boy nearly drowning in a lake, that kind of thing. I talk about Bobby in the book and the bad guys who tried to pull him under when he had a near-death experience. And then for some kids, this branch becomes a very literal kind of happening in which the child from a very young age feels the presence of evil. And these children, I believe, are rare, at least in my experience, although I have seen a handful of them over the years. One stands out. When he was 18 months old, he told his parents, "I'm here to teach others." And he didn't stop saying that. A few years later, when they began to get a divorce, he came into therapy, and from the very start, he said, "We have to fight the evil ones." And he was telling his mother that he felt them different places that they would go. So we did that in the playroom for 6 months. And at the end of that time, when he finally defeated them, he said, "Now I'm free and I can take the stars and put them in my eyes and my eyes sparkle and all of me sparkles." This is a 5-year-old boy.
Wow. But yeah, you know, it's interesting when you said that. You know who I thought of is Padre Pio, who is a Catholic saint. And he talks about fighting evil. And so, you know, I think perhaps there are people who came in this world or this dimension to experience that and to be spiritual warriors. I often think, too, that sometimes this in this branch is where past life leaks in, where, you know, if you believe in reincarnation, if you've had past life, from my work I have to believe in it because I've dealt with kids who have absolute phobias, fears, and I'm sure you have, of burning or of different water or different things, which have no justifiable claim in this life.
Right, yeah.
Yet it's there.
Yeah, it's very hard to explain other than a past life. The sixth branch is healing play, and this is very evident in my playroom because that's children play in here, of course. They touch on all kinds of issues. For instance, Mandy's develops a nurturing relationship with the puppet Freddie. She has poor self-esteem, and because of the trust that's involved in that relationship and the humor and the closeness, her self-esteem improves markedly over time. Another child, after being sexually abused, brings the dragon puppet to life as her perpetrator. And when she says, when the dragon comes, people are only safe if they're in their homes with their moms. And she goes on and on with that. In other words, it's metaphorical play to some extent. Now, for some children, it is literal play. And there's two examples of these children. One was a girl who repeatedly told the story of a young man who died in a fire. She did this in the dollhouse, and she said that the woman who was watching was very sad because she didn't get to say goodbye to the boy who died. So I said to her mother, "You know, I understand everything else you've been telling me, but I don't understand what it is. Why is she playing this out?" And I told her the story. Her mouth fell open, and she said, "I can only relate that to one thing. When I was a very little girl, my 16-year-old brother was smoking in bed, and he fell asleep and burned the house down, and he died. And I've always been sad that I wasn't able to say goodbye." And this little girl knew nothing of this story.
Except for ESP.
Yeah.
You know, through ESP. And, you know, I think that there's not enough validation or understanding given to that can happen, that often kids are sent or come into families to help the adults heal. And they give
That's
them
right.
knowledge like this. You know, and here they are in a 5 or 6 year old body or a 10 year old body trying to help the parent who seems so much older, which, you know, sometimes I think we're all 30,000 year old people, you know? It's really amazing, you know, if we would just listen to the wisdom within these kids, it's just mind boggling.
It is. Another story along those same lines, Atira, and then I'll move on to the seventh branch, is a little girl who was playing out that a woman had lost a baby. The baby had died. And I knew that the mother had had a spontaneous abortion and was grieving this loss, and she had talked about me, but she had not told her child. The child played out that there were two babies. So when I went out to talk to the mother, I told her that there were, the only thing that confused me was that there were two babies. And again, she was mystified. She said, I gave birth to twins, but no one else knows this except the doctor and the nurses. Not even her own mother knew that. So this is, again, another example of how connected we are with one
it's
another, especially in a family.
Right. When I was a child, actually, my mother had lost 4 children before I was born. My mother had two different families and then had my brother at 42 and me at 43. So there's a huge difference. It's a very different person, you know,
yeah.
a world.
Yeah.
And my aunt had also lost a child, and she was Catholic, very Catholic. And one day I came in, and they had been talking, and I could tell they had been crying. But I was outside playing, so when I came in, they were in the midst of this, you know, sort of scene, and they had been crying, and I said to my aunt, why are you crying? You know, da-da-da-da is the name of the baby, is right there with the angel. The angel is holding her. It's not in the purgatory, because I couldn't say purgatory. And, I mean, you know, it caused mayhem in my house, because, first of all, nobody knew. She had just told my mother that they had named the baby, which they don't usually do if it hasn't been christened, I guess. And that was her concern. It was in purgatory, not in, you know, with the angels. And I was going, oh, no, it's there with Martha, which was my mother. My mother never mentioned the name of my sister who had passed. And they both, you know, were sitting there just totally, like, aghast, you know. And I'm just like, okay, that's taken care of. Bye. You know, I went back outside to play. You know, mystery solved. I didn't think it was that big a deal till years later my mother said, you know, I'll never forget that afternoon for the rest of my life when you came in and did that.
I bet, yeah. See how wise you were and are?
It's an instant where, you know, they couldn't debunk that. They didn't know what to do with that, so they just pretended it never happened, you know.
Right.
Because, you know, they were so like, oh, God, now what do you do with her, you know.
And how did you feel?
Well, at that time, it was no big deal. All I knew is they weren't going to cry anymore because they knew that the babies were with the angels. Because I saw angels all the time.
Uh-huh.
So to me, I was like, okay, you know, they're not hurting anymore. The babies are safe. So, you know, everything's solved. Now, what was I playing with? You know?
Right.
I'm not a very deep person at the moment. But to me, if everything is in, the, you know, if the angels are there, everything was cool. You know, mission done. You know, I love in your book that you do give tools, you give support for people who don't see it, don't experience it, to not discount it. Because, you know, I really can't say don't discount your children, because we're losing what could be the most amazing next generation.
That's right, and one of the greatest resources we have, it's fundamentally who we are. And you rip that away from us, what's left?
Well, I can remember when I was smaller, until in my 20s even, when I kind of reawoke into my gift again, because I turned on the volume, I can remember younger, I wanted to be normal. Whatever normal was, I wanted it to be.
I understand
that,
yeah.
And I think a lot of these kids experience that same thing. I have to be like everybody else, because that way my parents will be happy, everybody will be happy with me, and it's impossible. It's a struggle that destroys really the core of your spiritual growth.
All the while you're feeling that something's missing, something's wrong with you, you have to be secretive. You can't be out and open about what's going on, and you certainly can't flourish in an authentic kind of way in your spiritual world. And the emptiness that goes with that. And I believe the alcohol and drug abuse, depression, suicide, on and on. Fearfulness, poor self-esteem. And if
poor
nothing
self-esteem.
Else,
let's talk about for that for a minute. You know,
okay.
I think that is the biggest epidemic in America. Poor self-esteem.
Isn't it?
And self-lack and absolutely not enough self-love. And I think people are very confused about what is ego and what is self-esteem.
Yes. Self-esteem is an issue for almost every child that I know. I started to say that I see, but I think that I know. And
absolutely.
For
it's very sad
most
statement.
Adults.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest struggle. People really are afraid if they feel good about themselves, they're an ego. And I said, no. Ego is, I have to make somebody less than to feel good enough. But self-esteem is, I'm good. I'm a good teacher. I'm a good therapist. I'm a good whatever. I'm good. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm who I am. Doesn't mean there can't be 20 other good teachers, you know? It's
that's
sad
right.
That we have been stripped of that strength that we so need to really function well in this world.
Dealing with the truth of who I am, dealing with my integrity, that's so important and yet so difficult, and there aren't many places to go with that. If you start with saying to a child, no, you don't feel that way, no, you don't have an imaginary companion, in fact, they're hostile towards the imaginary companion, then where's the self-esteem coming from? That's so basically who these kids are.
Well, I know I can still to this day remember my mother taking me to the minister to get me fixed. You know, basically.
Taking where? I'm sorry.
To the Baptist minister. Taking me to church because my mom was so afraid that it might be something, you know, that this invisible friend in these angels might not really be angels. They might be Satan or something in disguise. And really
right.
trying to, I mean, in her heart, she was trying to rescue me. She thought she was doing the very best for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that it had to be hard for her, and I'm sure she was very frightened. And, you know,
yes.
There wasn't a manual like this great book that was going to rescue.
Yeah.
Do you have a website? Let's mention your website before I forget.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is childrensspiritualintelligence.com. And the book
That's
is encouraging.
Thing, yeah.
Okay. childrensspiritualintelligence.com.
And
the
book
is Encouraging Your Child's Spiritual Intelligence.
So that we better get to the seventh branch because
okay.
I can talk about this all day. I'll have to have you back.
Yes. Okay. I'd love to be. The seventh branch is transformation. And this, to put it in a nutshell, is the dark night of the soul. When a child goes through something that is so devastating, they feel like they lose all empowerment, all hope for the future. Everything is shifted and changed. And they play that out in many different ways. What they end up doing, if they have the right support, validation, and recognition during that time, is that it's like the phoenix rising. There's a rebirthing. There's a transformation that's all for the positive. Their self-identity, the self-esteem issues we've talked about, all of that comes back in a much stronger, more real kind of way and is very lasting. They do need... Go ahead.
In this dark night of the soul, because I think it's very prevalent in our society, I think there are things that we don't mention. I mean, first of all, there's a lot of people who have lost their parents. I mean, there's children in grade school who have lost their parents to cancer, to automobile accidents, to just tragedies. But also the level of drug abuse in this world. In my parents' generation, if there's a woman who abandoned a kid, it was like the scandal, and it just was pretty rare. But now, you know, unfortunately, it is epidemic proportion, drug abuse for male and female, as well as alcohol. And sometimes
and children sometimes third, lose, yeah, they
and
lose that parent.
Second and third generations, they sometimes get it. My parents took foster kids, so I'm real familiar with the system.
Oh, okay,
my parents gave them a soft place to land, but, you know, truly, it is a struggle. And I think, you know, the Dark Knight is sold. Oprah even had a show on this organization that goes in and does a challenge day. And it challenges kids, if this has happened, walk across this line. You know, by the time they had covered
several subjects, everybody
had crossed the line. And
right.
Yet they're all thinking they're all alone till they saw it in a group setting. And they get, they're all going through some form of the Dark Knight of the Soul.
That's right. I do a lot of group work for that reason. Because they do, I think adults are the same. You know, if someone's going through a very painful time, it feels like you're alone. And
well, I also
kids,
think our right, and I also think our school system doesn't have the coping skills, I mean, anymore, to deal with the magnitude of what goes on for kids.
That's right. There's a big emphasis on.
Yeah.
That's right. There's such a big emphasis on academic success.
Yeah, if I hear one more thing about the waffle test, right?
Yes.
You know, they want them to jump through this waffle test, and they're dealing with their, you know, parents dying or something. It's traumatic. Are there other you have so many coping tools here, so many things in this book that are just for the parents of these kids. I can't say enough about the way that you've set up this quiz and giving them information of how to support the children and themselves. Because I think it takes courage to sit down and talk with a child about their invisible friend when you're not so sure where they are.
It does. It takes courage. And a lot of parents are very fearful. I think they have very good intentions. They're very loving. They just don't understand what is needed and that it's really okay for their children to have these gifts.
Well, I think, too, parents really worry, if my friend has an invisible friend like Dom, is my kid psychologically attached to him? Are they going to be dependent on it? Is this a ghost? And, you know, a lot of other generation and religions are teaching to be absolutely terrified of it. So there's there's a lot of questions for parents, you know. How much should that kid be connected to that spirit guide, that angel?
Right. Because they don't know who it is anyway, you know, and it's their job, they feel, to know all of this and have some influence over their child that's protective. It's a very difficult position to be in for parents. That's why I offered so many very concrete ways that parents can go ahead and support their kids. And parents as spiritual partners need support themselves. Groups of supportive groups with parents who are aware and awake and know their own spiritual child or would like to get to know the one inside of them are very valuable and probably very hard to find.
One of the things I noticed in your book, too, or when we talked, is that when you're in the playtime, spiritual play, I really thought it was important that you kind of ask questions or validate it, but ask questions and search. And I encourage my clients to do that. If your child is talking to an invisible friend, ask their name. Ask what they want. Ask them where they come from. Ask questions, because you certainly can tap into a negative energy. Just because somebody died doesn't mean they're good. So you can find out, is this spiritual entity coming to your kid in a positive way? If it's coming in a negative way, there are ways to stop that and tools to use to protect yourself as well. Because once in a while, a child is very distraught and may have had someone who passed of a drug issue. They could get attached to someone who on the other side who has that same issue. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes you tap into energy that's negative and fearful. And so we want to certainly tell the parents there are certainly questions and things you can ask tools you can use to help your child feel safe. And if they're having an experience where there is a negative issue, like a lot of people are really, I mean, we were talking about this the other day in a group that I teach, and how many people used to run and jump and leap in their bed, or they wouldn't, you know, wait till they couldn't hardly stand it to get up and go to the bathroom at night because they were so afraid of what was under the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember when my mother, when I was a kid, I thought it was a family ritual. I thought everybody's family did, I mean, everybody's mother did it. She used to come in and, because we took in foster kids, she'd say, okay, everybody look under the bed and catch dust bunnies for me. And everybody look in the closet,
true.
Nothing in the closet. Okay, now we're all going to go, you know, now you're safe. Go to bed and scoot over and make room for your guardian angel to wrap her wings around it. And I mean, that was the ritual in my home.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Even though
wonderful.
She's Southern Baptist. But
that's
I realized
wonderful.
It kept me and everybody. We used to laugh about dust bunnies under the bed. You know, we never were afraid of what was under the bed or what was in the closet because she did that. And years later, I asked her about that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, years later, I asked, and she says, well, because we had so many abused kids come to the house that were foster kids, and they were terrified because they'd been locked in closets
mm-hmm.
and other things. She said, that's the only way I could think of to take the fear out of it. But it's a great exercise. Anybody can use it.
That's a wonderful idea. Just to make it real, to bring it out, to talk about it so that it's not just carried by the child and has to be a secret.
Well, and also by her an adult looking under there with us, we were sure there was nothing under there, right? You know, when you're a kid,
right.
If an adult takes care of it, you know, you feel safer, usually. You know, if you're lucky enough to have a great adult. But, I mean, truly, because she took our fear about that seriously.
She validated it. If she had said to you, there's nothing under the bed, then, you know, that would have, you would have laid there wondering and worried.
You would have laid there all night going, it's under there, Mom, you just can't see
uh-huh,
it.
it's there.
It's going to come back when you go away, but because she looked with us. And it really was a joke. We loved it, you know. We were always like, we used to tease it, you know, we're going to stuff extra dust bunnies under the bed so she'd have to get some, you know. Some of those things we need to lighten up about. It's a good thing. It's a very good thing. It's been an absolute joy. I cannot believe our time's gone so fast. Again, your website.
It is childrenspiritualintelligence.com.
And the book is
And the book is, yes, Encouraging Your Child's Spiritual Intelligence.
It is a wonderful book. If you have grandkids, if you are have children, if you are know someone expecting a child, this could be really a wonderful, wonderful gift. And I'm sure there's a second book coming because it just builds on it. And there's so many wonderful stories that you told in here we really didn't even touch on. And just
we didn't begin to, did we?
No. Tests that you can take that helps you understand and evaluate how to view your child's spiritual intelligence. Thank you so much, Molly, for being here today with us. And I hope to have you back on the show, and we'll talk more about spiritual children and about play. I'd like to really talk a little bit more how parents can create using puppets or using tools that even you use to help validate or let their children get through experiences. Thank you so much for being on the show
Thank
today.
Thank you, Atira. You have a good evening.
Thank you so much. And remember to let your heart light shine to light your way and the way for others, and to stay wrapped in the wings of angels until we talk again. Lots of blessings. Bye.
Mary Ellen Angel Scribe, author of Expect Miracles and the Angels and Miracles Good Newsletter, can be found at angelscribe.com. Mary Ellen Angel Scribe, author of Expect Miracles and the Angels and Miracles Good Newsletter, can be found at angelscribe.com.